My name is Roy. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Roy.
Hi. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrines. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and to carry the message of recovery to those who still suffer. I will now ask for a volunteer to read How It Works as adapted from the AA Big Book. Anybody would like to read How It Works?
Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm a sugar addict. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with food, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the compulsive overeater, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were compulsive overeaters and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our obsession. C, that God could and would if he were sought.
I'd now like to... Are there any newcomers in their first 30 days of recovery who would care to stand and tell us your first name only? This is not to embarrass you, but just so we can welcome you. Any newcomers or relapsers like to identify
yourself? I'm Gabrielle. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Gabrielle. Welcome. Anybody else?
I'm coming back.
Eric? Hi, Eric. Welcome. Any other newcomers or People coming back? Huh? You came with Richard?
Yeah.
Hi, Ron. Welcome. Okay. Now I'll call Kate to give chips.
I'm Kate. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic.
Okay.
And we give chips at this meeting for newcomers, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, and we give candles for full years. So if you are going to take a chip, please come up and say your name and disease in the microphone so we can get it on tape. And is there anyone who would like to take a welcome chip under 30 days? Okay, a 30-day chip.
My name's Eric.
Hi, Eric.
I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic.
30 days.
Whoa.
Oh, step. Okay.
I'm Sarah, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Sarah.
Watch that. Okay. 60 days.
Yay.
Hi, I'm Paulina, anorexic compulsive overeater.
Hi, Paulina.
Um, 90 days.
Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict.
Hi, Debbie.
Anyone for 6 months?
Wow.
Hi, I'm Suzanne, a compulsive overeater.
Thanks. Okay. Is there anyone for 9 months? Any birthdays that I didn't know about? Okay. Thanks for letting me be of service.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Kate. Seventh tradition. It is now time for a seventh tradition. While we have no dues or fees, we do have expenses for this meeting, and each group ought to be fully self-supporting to its own contributions. Our treasurer, May, will be passing the baskets. Would someone like to read the 12 traditions while May passes the basket? Michael?
Hi, I'm Michael. I'm a compulsive overeater.
The
12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop compulsive eating. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thanks, Michael. Okay, time for our speaker. Our main speaker tonight gets to share experience, strength, and hope on what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. We can, if you want, we can give you a sign at 10 after, and you can take 10 minutes of questions at quarter after if you feel like it, or you can keep going. I'll just give you a 10 after sign. So without further ado, I'll introduce our speaker tonight, Vivian.
Hi, I'm Vivian. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi,
First, I want to thank Roy for asking me to speak, and I want to welcome Gabby, who I've known for a long time, and all the Chip and birthday people. It's like, what a great meeting. What a good energy here. Ah, my God. And Leslie, too. This is fabulous. And I used to go to to qualify first, I've been abstinent for 19 years from sugar. Somebody, I think it was Debbie, qualified as a sugar addict, right? Me too. And I haven't had sugar in all that time. Because when I came in here, it's a physical, emotional, and spiritual disease, but they really stressed on the physical addiction then, which I'm very grateful for, because I had a terrible physical addiction that I had to address the way they talked about it in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, it's an allergy. I have an allergy to certain foods, and my sponsor knew before I did that they were sweets. Like, I didn't cotton on to that at first, because the thought of giving up anything, up sugar, anything sweet, it was just so impossible and frightening that I couldn't even imagine doing that. Like, if I tried to do it for 24 hours and I couldn't do it. I'm one of the lucky people, I think, who I wasn't able to fool myself that I wasn't a compulsive eater, because I couldn't even go 24 hours and eat the way I wanted to. There were just millions of seconds in the day. And they say 24 hours like it's one day, like you do it in one leap, and it's not. It's like there's second after second after second, which takes so long when you're dying to eat. And so there was no doubt in my mind. I had taken step one when I got here. I mean, oh, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I mean, what it was like was, I have been, since I was little, I was obsessed with being thin, and I had an eating disorder from a very young age. I remember being put on a diet when I was younger. My mother had been overweight when she was younger, and then she got thin at age 16, and she was a very beautiful woman. She became a model after that for a little while, and she never had a weight problem again. But feeling like I was her daughter, it's like, you know, I used to eat like she ate, and they were like, oh, you know, you have a problem too. And I look at pictures of myself now, or I have when I was younger, and I didn't even look that much like I thought I would look like obese, and I didn't. I couldn't even really tell that I was overweight, but I guess I was always, they used to refer to it as pleasantly plump then. I was always pleasantly plump, and I loved sweets. I used to eat, and I would go into oblivion when I ate. I mean, I would eat like pickles and potato chips and dream. Like, I could go into just a movie in my head and completely get out of wherever, whatever reality was going on at that minute. And that's, I can always do that with food. Can I still do that with food? Probably. But I mean, to the extent that I used to do it was just amazing. Like, I didn't know what I was feeling, or like, I wanted to avoid bad feelings, basically. Like, if I'm hurt, I don't want to feel that I'm hurt. I would rather go to lunch and not even know, you know. And when I start crying later, I'm like, what am I crying about? I can't even connect the two before I get abstinent, because just instinctively I reached for like something to make it feel better, and that food just always worked. And food is, you don't have to be 18 or growing up to get food. I mean, you don't have to wait till you're a teenager like you do with drugs and alcohol. You can just, if that's your thing, you can just go for it from a very young age. So I did. And I went through periods where I had a terrible body image too. I had no idea what I looked like. Like, I had periods where I was very thin, and I still thought I was fat. If I thought that, if I looked in the mirror, and I was never anorexically thin, like I was never like Calista Flockhart thin, but I was like thin, like people, like about the same size I am now, and still thought that I was overweight. I can remember looking in the mirror at Ann Taylor, putting this outfit on and thinking, gee, I look pretty good. And then, you know, not allowed to look good. Recompute. So I look in the mirror again. Oh yeah, my butt's sticking out too much. And you know, oh, I see a little stomach. There's the truth. The truth is always something negative about how I looked. Like, if I thought I looked good, that was a lie. There was something wrong with that. And today, one of the gifts of the program today too is I like my body. I think I look good. And that's a separate gift. I know a lot of people, I've sponsored a lot of beautiful women who don't think they look good and think they're fat or think they're, you know, there's something. And I'm happy today that part of the gifts of not only do I not compulsively overeat, not only have I had God has relieved that compulsion to eat sugar and to go into oblivion because I couldn't face reality, that part of it is feeling I feel comfortable with the way I look. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Anyway, because it helps, it helps with confidence. You know, it's just a big pain in the butt, really, feeling like you don't look good all the time. And it's because you wake up with you every day and have to look at the mirror. So it's one of these little things that just mean a lot that I got from OA. So I would eat and I would diet and I would eat and I would diet. And I was able to really diet before. I had a tremendous amount of willpower, which went out the window as my disease progressed. And I wasn't able to diet anymore. I mean, I was able at one point to eat like, three times a day, yogurt and buttermilk, like a cup and a half of yogurt and buttermilk three times a day with, I think it had wheat germ in it. And, that was the diet, and it worked fast, I'll tell you. But it also, just like it says in our book, you end up, with your pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, you end up just, 10 step backwards. Every 5 steps you go forward. So, because it's something you can't keep up as a lifetime practice, eating abnormally, whether it's too much or too little. So, I'll skip forward to when I got to program, because I think you believe now that I belong here. A lot of people see me eat today and would never believe I have a problem, but I think I've said enough that you would believe me. I'll just say one more thing. I used to keep a diary of what I ate every day. It had 3 paragraphs on it, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I mean, it was like I was just all consumed with food and all this stuff. So anyway, I got to California, Los Angeles, and I met a guy on a bus who was very cute, and he introduced me to program, basically. He asked me what time it was. One would not think this was a defining moment in one's life. However, it turned out to be. And so I turned to him and I said, it's lucky I was so happy I had a watch. Like, it's because he was very cute. It's whatever it was, 3:30. And he said, thank you. And then turned around. I was like, wow, like my heart's beating. Like, I had absolutely no way to relate to men even when I got here. I was like so happy that we had this successful interaction. Like, hooray. And later on, there was a person that I worked with. And I'm another person who I didn't know what to do when I got it in the work world. Like, I know how to do school, but I had no idea what to do in the work world. I was just like a lot. I hear so many people are dying to leave school. You had to take me kicking and screaming from school because I felt completely lost. Like, I don't know what to do in a job. I don't know how to do that. I know how to open books and sit in the front of the room, and that's about it. And so I didn't want to do that. So I was in this job where I was going nowhere. I graduated from college. I got to this job where it was a cable TV concern, and they were always having complaints from people because the service never worked. And I was in charge of like fielding complaints and making sure the phone lines were in order, basically. I didn't even know what they hired me for, but that's what I ended up doing. And so I was calling the phone company all the time, every day. But I gave myself this grandiose title, like communications analyst or something. I couldn't even admit what I was because my ego was so big, but my abilities were so little. And so I had met a person there who was in OA, and her name was Barbara Z. She was a 100-pounder. She had lost many hundreds of pounds, and she was older than I was, and we got along really, really well. She was extremely funny. Do you remember her? Where is she? I haven't seen her in the longest time. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. But she was a very funny woman. She took this program really seriously, and I would say she was still at least 250, but she had still lost hundreds of pounds. And her husband had been an actor, and she had been in a Robert Altman movie, and she was just a very funny and very smart and very, we got along great, which was unusual for me because I was so immature, I never got along with anyone who was older than me. It was either you were my age or you were younger. And she was definitely older, but we got along really well. So she said to me, why don't you, you want to go out and just do something outside of work? And I go, sure. And she said, well, she wanted to see a play and then go to an AA dance, an Alcoholics Anonymous dance. And I just thought, what a bizarre idea. I think I had heard of AA from the television because I did not know anyone who was in AA, but I knew that it was, you know, it was for people who had an alcohol problem and that it worked. And I just imagined a bare light bulb with old men in raincoats shuffling about, you know, in the dark back and forth. And the one thing about with my eating disease, I used to look in the mirror, and if there was somewhere that I wanted to go to, if I didn't think I looked good enough, I wouldn't go. But I thought, who the hell cares who sees me in this AA dance? I mean, like, so I was all ready to go. I said, you know, why not? And I thought, I like doing bizarre things. This is certainly strange. Let's do it. So I went to this dance, and guess who was there? The guy on the bus. That out of all the 11 million people in Los Angeles, that same guy that I had seen that morning on the bus was at this dance. And so I went up to him, and he was, like, dancing. I went up to him, and I was like, you know, were you on the bus today? And he's like, oh, yeah, hi, how are you? So he starts dancing, and we're dancing together. I'm thinking, God, this is the cutest guy. And he starts talking about how he had just left his job because of drinking and all this stuff, and I was so embarrassed for him. I couldn't believe he was telling me all this stuff. And he asked me out on an AA date. He goes, would you like to go to an AA meeting tomorrow night? I thought, another bizarre activity. Like, why not? So I said, yeah, if you meet me there, because I was afraid he would ditch me and I'd be at this place where I didn't know where the hell I was. If you meet me there and call me beforehand, I'll go. So I went to this AA meeting, and through that, I mean, Barbara never thought that I had a problem with food, because she couldn't imagine that people who weren't very overweight could have a problem with food. But later I was sitting at a long table of dinner. I think it was, we were actually at the Pacific Group New Year's Eve party. And she was like, what happened to that, like, cupcake that was sitting here? I was like, I ate it. Like, I couldn't stand it. It was sitting there for so long. It was just, this is the way I was with food. It's like, I have to, you know, like, either eliminate it or get it out of my sight. And if it's, I need to eat it, or else if it's sitting there, I have to have it, because it just preys on my mind. So I went to this AA dance, and then we ended up dating for a while, and he poked me in the hips one day, and he goes, you need to go to OA. You're like overweight. And of course, I'm like totally, I've already told you how I deal with bad feelings. Like, you know, I eat something, so I didn't even feel hurt at this. I just was like, okay, where do I go? You know, there's something for me that'll work for my weight, you know, because it was something that happened that was an offshoot of Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew it would work, because I knew AA worked, so I knew this would work. So I went to my first meeting, and I remember sharing about, it was about how I used to go through grocery stores just eating my way through and just figured, lunch, you know, I'd save some money. And people were like, yes, yeah, well, we understand, we were late. And people were sharing things that I knew I was home. Like, I'd never heard people share about food in this way, and they seemed to have a solution. And I was really excited. I was really excited because I didn't want to be fat. I mean, I knew. I had taken step one, like, a long time ago. I knew I was powerless over food. I didn't know when the next time was going to be that I'd be able to control it and diet. I really didn't. And then they had a strange way of going about it. They said, you have to act as if there's a God and pray to God. And I just thought, at this point I was an agnostic, someone who I have nothing for or against God, but he hadn't proved to me he was there yet. So I didn't really want to talk about it, but they said, just do this. And I thought, how hypocritical, you know, I'm going to pray to this God, and I didn't even believe that there is a God. And they go, you know what? That doesn't matter. This is how the program works, and you don't have to believe it. You just have to take these actions. And if you like, you can believe that the group around you has more power than you do yourself. Now, that was easy for me to believe, because all these people around here were, they also wanted me to do well. It was a very supportive group. Like OA meetings are, people want you to do well. So I held on to that, and Barbara Z was I got her to be my first sponsor, and she, it was even hard for me to ask her to be my sponsor, and she is such a nice person. I mean, you can't even imagine somebody so friendly and, you know, unintimidating, and I was terrified asking her to sponsor me. I was terrified asking anyone to do anything, and I realized I was just so full of fear. I had really forgotten who I was, and I didn't want to tell you who I was, because I was of the opinion that if I have problems, I should be able to solve them. And if you have problems, I don't want to hear about them, because I'm solving my problems, damn it. And so I don't want to hear anything from you either. So I was walking around being very false about things, and I remember seeing the 12 steps and looking at the big book, and it just seemed like such a highfalutin way to live. I was just so impressed. I mean, made a searching and fearless moral inventory, and I felt really ashamed of the way I was living. I was like, here I was going through alleyways when I could, hiding behind, you know, so no one could see how fat I was. I mean, I was so obsessed with how I looked. I would go through alleyways so I wouldn't have to go through, like, main streets where people would see me. And here, you know, asking God to remove your shortcomings, making a list of amends, making actual amends to people. I mean, this was just so high level. And I was really impressed. And I thought, this makes sense. I bet you a lot of the times I'm eating is because I'm eating over things that I'm ashamed of or you know, things that I did that I feel bad about. And it made sense to me that this program would work. Also, I had never tried anything like it before. If it had been like the next Cosmo diet, I knew that wouldn't work because I'd done so many diets. It had to be something I had never heard of or thought of before. So I jumped into this all the fervor of someone who wants to get an A in class, because that is just my personality. And they said, stick with the winners. So I did. And the winners, for anyone who is new, are people who come to meetings regularly, who make sense when they share. and even as a newcomer, you can tell this. And I noticed that people who had a lot of time seemed to make the most sense. And I thought, you know, this is good. And get commitments. They told me to get commitments, and I got commitments right away. I got in with people who... They're like, I remember somebody raising my hand to share, like, you know, because I didn't think anything that I had to say was worth listening to. I mean, if I can't amuse you, why should I even be up here? And I got in with the crowd. They were just like, you know, get up and share. And they raised my hand. I got up there. I go, did I do all right? They're like, you did good, kid. I was like, great. Like, I just did whatever everybody told me to do. And I became secretary of the newcomers meeting, even at a month, and somebody asked me to sponsor them, and I started sponsoring them. Did I know what I was doing? No! I did not know what I was doing, but I was willing to do it, which is all that matters here. If you're willing to take the action, it doesn't matter how lame you think you are, you will still get well, is my experience. So I think the first thing that cleared up was my work situation. I told you I was in this job where I was just calling up the phone company all day. Lines are broken. Trunk, this is gone, you know, like this, you know. And I would get there. It didn't even matter what time I got there. It was just such a... I have found that the worse worker I am, the worse jobs I get. And the better worker I become, the better jobs I get. And I think there is a direct correlation. So when I first got here, they told me, show up on time and smile. Now, this is still, to this day, this is the best work advice I've ever got in my life. And this is 20 years ago almost I got this advice. And it's still, if anybody's having a problem in the work area, show up on time and smile. Because it sure as heck worked for me. First of all, I never would get anywhere on time. I always would get there late. I have a thing about, I hate getting places on time. It makes me, I'm afraid maybe you won't be there. Or I don't like getting there on time, but they made me get there on time. So I got there a little early or whatever. And I smiled the whole way. And that first year, I got a bonus for being like one of the best employees. They gave me they didn't even give these out. They give out spot bonuses for you being a great employee. And it was like equal to like 1/10 of my, like 10% of my salary, which at that time was like, you know, $12,000 a year. It was nothing, but still was, wow, $1,000. I just couldn't believe it. And I've gotten better and better jobs since then. Just by that, by being of service. Also, when I got here, I thought my ego was so big, I thought, I am so much smarter than all of you, but please don't give me anything more difficult than Xeroxing, because I don't think I can do it. It was basically how I approached work. And then Xeroxing, suddenly, like, I realized the correct answer to Xeroxing is, I'd love to. and going off and doing it and doing the absolute best job possible in as quick a time as possible and then handing it in. And with that kind of attitude, people keep giving you better jobs to do. So, and today, hey, it's funny, I'm here. I lost my job last Friday, the Friday before, which is a shame, but it's, you know, partly the economy. But that was a damn great job. I mean, I worked at home. I worked at home, and I got paid a nice hourly rate, and I had clients on this really great account, and I mean, it was an enviable job. I was, you know, lucky to have it. So, and now I'm putting out my resume, and I think I'm going to decorate my house if I don't find anything soon. It just keeps getting better and better in that area. The next thing I think was parents. Like when I got here, I had a very antagonistic relationship with my mother, especially. With my dad, really not, because my dad is so, and my dad and I have never locked horns. My dad is a very low-key guy. He's he never gets in anyone's business. He's just a nice guy. But my mother and I, we seem to have a lot of the same character defects, and so we were always sort of fighting each other. Like I would get on the phone, and in our family, nobody yells, nobody screams, nobody fights. However, we would get to the, I mean, we couldn't stand each other, and we'd get to the point where we'd just be just a second away from like, from saying, screaming, and then we'd hang up. It was just a bad relationship. So my sponsor suggested to me, why don't you call up your parents and just say hello to them? You know, instead of asking them for money all the time. And this had never occurred to me before. I mean, I had such a bad attitude as a daughter. I thought, you know, if you had me, then, you know, hey, you asked for it. And, you know, I need money. I'm not earning enough. Need to pay rent. And I was just really bad that way. And it had never occurred to me to just call up and say hi. Also because I didn't know what else to say to them. And my sponsor said, oh, because we didn't have a close relationship. They're not touchy-feely type of parents either. I mean, they're nice people, but they're not like, oh, tell us your, you know, they're not like pal parents. They're like parent parents. And so my sponsor said, you don't have to say a lot. You know, just write down a few things that are non-controversial, and which is a key, and just tell them a few things about your life, and then you can hang up. So I did that. I called up. I said hello. I didn't ask for anything, and I did this for a long, long time, and slowly things started to get better, and at one point, even to make it funny, I mean, you know how a lot of times you give something away and you get it back. At one point, when I first got out of school, I really did not realize how little money I was making. I did not have a concept of, I thought when you got out, you'd get a job and you'd be able to pay your bill. When you get out of school, for me anyway, I got out of school and I got a job and not making much money, and I didn't know that I couldn't pay my bills. So I got into credit card debt before I realized I don't have any money. And then I cut back, and at one point, and I wasn't asking my parents for money anymore, and at one point my mom called me and said, you know, we've decided to pay off one, because I wanted them to co-sign a thing to consolidate your credit cards onto one bill instead of, you know, 20% interest a year. And she goes, well, we've decided to pay one of your credit cards off. I mean, and that was great. I mean, and I didn't ask for it. I'm sure if I would have asked for that, I never, ever would have gotten it, because she was pissed at me. With good reason. And today we have a very good relationship. We don't have like the palsy-wowsy, like we tell each other every little dark secret, but I laugh a lot with her. We get along very well. And I actually choose to spend Christmas with my parents. I go and I spend like 10 days with them, which I don't have to do. But I want to. I have a good time with them now. And they really are fun parents. They like to go do things. And that relationship turned completely around just from calling up and saying hi. You know, really tiny little things turn stuff around, but you have to wait it out. You have to wait out, like, showing up on time and smiling. You can't do it once. You have to do it consistently for a long time, and then things start to turn around. And then I think the last thing is relationships. I was, as I said, yeah, I sort of gave you a clue about how bad I was at relationships when I, you know, asking someone or telling someone the time was like a big success story for me. Like, wow, we did that and got away with it. Hooray. When I came here, I was, first of all, I was terrified of men. And I remember I would,
when I first got in here, I would flirt with you until you asked me out, and then I figured, well, that's enough. You know, like, that, to me, that was a notch on my bedpost. Like, that's enough. Next. Because I just couldn't even deal with the whole thing. I just had just very bad, just a lot of fear. And so I went through, and before when I got in here too, I had a lot of, I usually don't mention this, but I will since it's coming into my mind, but I'm in AA too, and when I would drink, I mean, I had a lot of like one night stands, and I was just, I always thought I was in love. I mean, I am such a delusional romantic. I just really had no idea what was going on, and so I had to go through that stage again of like, you know, we weren't in love. Like, I don't get it. And it always felt like a train wreck. It felt like I was hit by a train. Like, where was the beginning, middle, and end of this? Like, I used to like take a calendar and you like cross off like, oh, made another day. Hooray. You know, if we made like 30 days, it was like huge. I just did not know how to do this thing. And I really wanted to know how, but didn't know how. And then one day somebody told me, I don't know how it came up. Somebody told me to go to Al-Anon. And that really, really did it for me. I realized there were a lot of, even though there's not much alcoholism in our family, I mean, I found out my great-grandfather's an alcoholic, and I have a cousin who's a really bad drug addict, but pretty much everybody else doesn't drink, doesn't, nothing. I mean, and no eating issues, nothing. You know, just pretty, very normal family. But the behavior, a lot of that behavior that goes along with that has still been passed down into our family. And so I did not know that a lot of the things I was doing in relationships were, I was making the wrong compromises. Like, I did not know that, for instance, I didn't know that you don't have to say your opinion all the time to be, you can just be quiet and not cause a fight. I thought I was lying if I wasn't, like, I'm not being truthful if I don't tell you exactly how I feel all the time. And they taught me, no, you don't have to do that. You're not lying. You can just, like, keep your peace. I was just like, wow, that was, like, huge. And I didn't know how to make healthy compromises in myself. I did not know that how to keep the things that I like to do and be the things that I like to be and not always just do whatever you wanted to do. I really did not know how to do that. I mean, and yet I wouldn't do things like if you wanted me to like cook your dinner, that was 5 minutes. Okay. Well, okay. If you wanted me to, and then I had like things that I wouldn't compromise on that were really silly in retrospect. Like I would not, like if you wanted me to cook dinner for you, forget it. Like I would not, the thought of it just made me enraged. Like, what? I'm equal to you. Forget it. I'm not serving you. And today I realized that was, and also it really mattered to me whether you stayed with me or not, even if I didn't like you. It really mattered to me. And Alan really, and you know, I just have to mention it because it was a combination of OA, of like all my programs and finally going to Al-Anon, but it really changed for me. Like, when I met my husband, I didn't care anymore. It's like, you know what? If you don't like me, I don't care. Like, I am not so bowled over by you that, you know, I'll do anything to keep you here. I'm just not that impressed. And I just was sort of myself. And the funny thing, it was sort of like a boomerang. It's like, if you throw it out and you're yourself, a lot of times it comes back anyway. You know, I thought, you know, if you don't, but I realized too, even if you will compromise yourself to the point where, so they, people stay, they leave anyway. So what's the point? So I just, but it had to be an inner change in me, and that's what happened. It was like an inner change, right? I really surrendered. And surrender feels like, I don't care. Like, I just don't care. And that made a big difference. And today I am happily married, which is, I've been married for 5 years now. I hadn't had, my longest term relationship had been, I think it was 2.5 years, but one and a half of them we were living in, you know, different countries even, so, or apart. I mean, and it was when I was in college. It was that long ago. And I consider that an absolute miracle that today, that was the final frontier. Today, relationships are good. So, what, I have 5 minutes? I'll take questions, because that's...
It's up to you.
If you want to do questions, I mean, that's pretty much all the things I have learned since, I could talk about God, too, though. Here, let's talk about God, because that is very important. When I first got here, I didn't have a spiritual program at all, and it didn't bother me that I didn't have one. I wasn't like against God I was very neutral about God. But luckily they tell you in the big book, I guess they figure there are a lot of us who don't know how to interact with God, because they have a few pages on how you should do this should you have any questions. And they say, on awakening, those ones on awakening. And I did was repeat the words from on awakening when I first started. And, I can never remember what they are when I'm standing from a podium, but, I yellowed them in just as if I would, highlighted them as if I were in school. I just used it as a textbook and just said them out loud. And I remember when I first got abstinent too, it was very near here, a place called Cafe Casino. I remember there were a lot of French pastries in this place. A lot of people from OA used to go. There were a lot of French pastries, but there was also healthy food, and I was like circling the pastries. And I didn't know whether, and I thought, and when you have no days or one day, it's not such a big deal to go out. You figure, who cares? I start another day. But, and I thought, well, let me just pray to God, because they say to do that. Oh, God, some prayer, probably, please help me, something like this. And it wasn't as if I felt like burning bush or whoomph. It didn't feel like, the desire was taken away. But I did end up walking out. I ended up walking out. I think that was the real turning point when I started putting together days. And, once you do it some time together, then it becomes more precious. And because I kept on going to meetings and I kept, I still talk to God. And today I believe I've surrendered just about everything. I guess you can't completely surrender, but in my conscious mind, I don't think there's anything that I can do better than God. I don't. I think at the very best, I could maybe guess what God has in mind for me and then do that. But I don't think I can get higher than God. So why don't I just ask God, anyway, if that's the best I can get to is trying to guess what God wants for me, I might as well ask God to do for me. And I have gotten there by trial and error, just by, falling down, getting bruised ankles, and it always seems to work out better when I give things over to God. So it can't be a coincidence if it happens over and over and over. So I think I've talked about God. I am happy to take any questions if you have any questions, and thanks for letting me share. What's that? Oh, okay. Are there any questions? And then I will repeat them in the mic. Otherwise, I'll start talking about something else if you have no questions. Yes. Okay, what do I eat each day? My abstinence is no sugar, and I'm happy to be specific about it. If sugar's in the first three ingredients, I don't have it. So, and I got that from my favorite diet dressing. It was creamy cucumber, and sugar was the fourth ingredient, so that was how I chose that. And it's worked all these years. But so my abstinence, I don't eat sugar, and that's something that I don't have to work against. I really feel like that place, and I have for years, that place that they talk about in the big book where we neither recoil from the flame nor are cocky. I mean, the problem has just been removed. That's absolutely true with me for sugar. And I have eaten healthier and healthier three meals a day the longer I am abstinent. I mean, if you want to know what I eat typically, I mean, I have coffee, I have juice, oatmeal, and then I'll have some kind of protein and vegetable for lunch, maybe a salad or something, it depends, or a sandwich. Very boring. I mean, and something similar for dinner. It's just it just sounds like normal eating. It's not like a magic elixir. But the thing is, I'm able to do that now, and I wasn't able to do that before. And I don't feel this compulsion to eat when I'm not hungry. That was, huge. Now I pretty much eat when I'm hungry, and when I'm not, I don't. Pretty much. Nothing's perfect, but pretty much. Yes? Am I a label reader? It depends if it's a, if it's something like that I've never seen before. I mean, if it's, gosh, I don't need too many new things. If it's something new that I haven't seen, like if it's some kind of dressing or I will eat fruit juice sweetened desserts if it's fruit juice, not if it's cane sugar or brown sugar or anything like this. But so I'll look at that and see if there's something in there. That's usually the only time I have to look, because otherwise I eat so many healthy things. I mean, what do you have to look at for a lettuce? What do you have to look at for, you know, cherries? Oh, okay, I'm not a diabetic, so. Okay, that's fine. Okay, well, then your case is a little different from mine. I only have to look at labels if I'm eating something that's packaged that I've never seen before, but it's, me personally, if you're asking me personally, I don't have to read a lot of labels because I eat so many things that are just so obvious with what they are. Like, it's a chicken. Yeah? Okay, that's another program that I will, since I spoke about it, I'll just give it to you briefly. I mean, it's, for me, this was my experience, whether it was just, it was like Relationships Anonymous. I mean, people use it classically for if there is an alcoholic in your family to be able to deal with that, or an alcoholic that you know. But for me, this just, it showed me a lot of bad patterns that I had with dealing with relationships that I didn't know were there, that I think were just passed on through the family just because they were. And so it was a big turning point for me, because it was something I was not able to find in OA just itself. As much as I worked the program and sponsored people, and I needed to get this extra help. Yes?
What was the turning point when you actually believed that God was in your life and surrendered?
Oh, great.
How do you find your higher power, and how has that changed?
What a great question. That has been in different steps. Like, I found that my belief in a higher power increases with everything that, every issue that I finally get so sick of running myself that I decide to give God a chance, basically. I also found out which things I didn't care about. Strangely enough, work. Even though I was a very ambitious person, I really gave that to God immediately. I really didn't care. I was not holding on to it. And that was the one that improved the fastest. Relationships was the one that I didn't want to give to God, because it mattered so much to me, and I held it right to me, because I thought, what if God wants me to be an old maid for the rest of my life? I can't deal with it. I won't do it. And I just held on to it and held on to it until finally one day it occurred to me, God couldn't do any worse of a job than I have. You know, why don't I give him a year or two, see how he does? And I didn't know why it took me so long to even think of that, because it wasn't like I was having a lot of success in this area, but the light comes whenever the light comes. So it's just been little by little like that. I remember one time in my very early abstinence, and maybe the first few months, where I had something that I needed to say to somebody who had hurt my feelings, which I wasn't used to talking to people who had hurt my feelings. I'm used to, like, you know, eating over that and getting back to them in an underhanded fashion that they may even never know about. Because we often punish ourselves when we have resentments. But I wanted to tell this person that he hurt my feelings, and somebody said to me, like, why don't you pray for God to God for the words? And I just thought this was a stupid thing to do. like, how stupid? But I thought, oh, I'll do it anyway. So I prayed to God for the words, and it came out really well. And even at that point, I didn't quite believe. I said, well, it's a coincidence. Like, hey, it's a coincidence. But if you keep on doing these experiments, where, okay, let's ask God to do it, to take this now. God, please give me the words. I'm really frightened about something that's going to happen. Please help me with this. And when they keep coming out well, constantly. No longer can it be a coincidence. Or else it would be randomly happening well and randomly not. But after trying these so many different times, over the years with different things, that's what's convinced me. It's an educational variety of learning about God, but I have noticed that every single thing that I have surrendered has come out well, and all the things that I am not able to surrender, and there's nothing you can do except keep on going to meetings and wait it out when you don't want to surrender. You can't make yourself surrender, I have found. You just have to, like, keep on going until the time comes. And it will come. If you keep on going to meetings and keep working a program, the time will come and the surrender will come. Is it time? Right on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Vivian. That was great. I would now like to thank everyone associated with this meeting, including everyone who read Steps and Traditions, our timer, who's me, I guess, our treasurer is May, our program chairperson is me, our chip person is Kate, our lifeline person. Is anyone here to make a lifeline pitch? Does anybody want to subscribe to Lifeline? See me after the meeting and I'll find them. Huh? It's like, go ahead, make a pitch there, Dave.
Lifeline is a journal of recovery. It has lots of stories and personal. In some cases, it's written by members of OA all across the world.
Thank you, Devin. Tate, our literature person. Do we have a literature person? No. Okay. There's a commitment for this meeting. Somebody wants new and like a commitment. It'll help your recovery. Please see me after the meeting. Our tape recording person is Sandy. Would you like to make an announcement?
Hi, I'm Sandy. I'm also a reader.
Sandy.
And we tape this meeting, and we'll have Vivian's tape available for sale right after the meeting, $4.50, all the other speakers. Now, I have some overstock that I'm trying to get rid of. And these are hot, they're just like without the cases. Anything I have left like that is two for $5. And anything else that's in stock is $4.50. If I don't have a copy of it, I'll make you a copy. And see me after the meeting if you're interested. Thanks for letting me do this.
Okay. Let's see. OA-related announcements? I just have one. I was given Ida, who spoke here, one of our earlier speakers, said this is for the South Bay in Long Beach, Saturday, September 14th, which I guess is about a month from now, 1 to 5 p.m., Belmont Heights Methodist Church, home of the Friday Night Long Beach meeting, which is one of their bigger meetings, 317 Terminal Street in Long Beach. They're going to have a big kind of marathon, 1 to 5 p.m. There'll be pitch meeting, fellowship, spotlighting passages from the new stories in Alcoholics Anonymous, 4th edition, which is a big book. And no suggested donation. The intergroup thanks the meetings for the support. And if you want information or to give service, Ida left her number. And next week. Oh, good. Okay, we have a little workshop for the L.A. area. Letting Go of Fear Sunday, August 18th, 2 to 5 p.m. at the Westside Pavilion Community Room. I guess
no,
that's
moved.
Is that for sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it still 2 to 5 p.m. then at the Lions Club? Whatever. Anyway, there's a Dawn is with a number for a contact person, so you can check with her. And that's it. Any other OA announcements? Would someone like to read Vision for You as adapted from the Big Book and lead us in a closing prayer of their choice? Mm-hmm. Sure.
Hi, I'm Sandy. I'm a compulsive reader. A Vision for You.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the compulsive overeater who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you'll surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And after a moment of silence for the compulsive overeater still suffers, join me in the Lord's Prayer.